All right. Welcome to the crypto economy, Carr, from the Friends Against Government podcast. How are you doing, man?
Oh, good, good. I thought we were rolling.
Well, we are rolling. This is the informal introduction. I may or may not use it, so we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, doing really good. Thanks for having me. And I don't even know if we've I don't know who is whose guest at this point, or if we're both each other's guest, or what the deal is. But
this is going to be its own show. Okay. We're starting a new show, and this is episode one of the new show.
Okay.
It's Guy and Carr. Guy and Carr, and this is Bitcoin 2019.
Okay. Oh man, it's going to be a one series or one episode series.
Yeah. It's those are, you know, it's basically like a feature, you know.
Yeah.
And try to get a theater release for this one. Theatrical release.
Yeah. So a little bit of background on the way that this launched was Guy and I share a location. I don't remember how much you let out on you know, in public on that, but
down in North Kakalaki.
Okay, yeah. So I'm from Kakalaki. Guy is too. So whenever I'm back, we grab lunch or we grab drinks. And the last time we were back, I met up with the rest of the Raleigh Bitcoin squad, which was amazing. It was a lot of fun. A lot of great dudes came out, and so we were you know, we drank a couple beers, and when you drink a couple beers, you get a couple crazy ideas. And so we wanted to do like a little bit of a less technically intense accounting of the Bitcoin world, and we figured who better to do it than the two of us.
Hell yeah.
So here we are.
Man, dude. And it has been crazy as shit.
Yeah.
I actually had a 2019 follow-up where we did sort of kind of get into a lot of specifics, more importantly about Lightning, with Brady the other day. That's what I told you I was talking to him. That's what we did. We did a whole show all about a lot of the technical development and stuff that's happened in Bitcoin this year. How much have you been using Bitcoin? Have you been lurking like you do in the crypto economy crew, or like what's your level of involvement right now? Like, what do you play with, I guess?
So I would say that I've resigned myself to, at least in the last 6 to 8 months, more or less a pretty passive hodler and stacker of sats.
It's a good role to play. It's a good one.
It is. It's pretty foolproof. So I had a Lightning node going, but then, you know, I'm doing the hardware shuffle that everyone does where, you know, one thing fails and then you jury rig it, and then another thing fails and then you jury rig that, and then you decide you need a new computer, and then the whole thing, you know. So I've been on that that Ferris wheel for most of 2019. So I no longer have my Lightning node set up. I need to get that up again, but so in the last 6 to 8 months, I would say it's mostly more than occasionally and less than every day listening to the crypto economy and just stacking sats where I can.
Nice. Listening to the crypto economy is a good way to stay up to date on the goings on.
Yes.
I've been in the exact same situation. I don't know if this is like a normal state of like all like cyberspace people, like the people who are like real nerds and they're like here on the internet, but I am in the constant flux of never really having a computer that works.
Yes.
This one, in fact, this might go out on us in the middle of the show.
Sure.
I have a Hackintosh, so it's custom hardware that is running Mac OS and tricking it into thinking it's different hardware, basically. Yeah. And
that sounds like the recipe for a very stable setup that requires virtually no tinkering.
And I've recently gotten to, and I'd had an old operating system because updates are a complicated process. So I've been hanging on to an old operating system for a while, and I finally got to just upgraded to Mojave right when Catalina came out. And
what is I don't know what those are.
Oh, sorry. They're just the new Mac OS.
Oh,
Catalina is the most recent one. Mojave is the one right before that.
Okay.
And not a whole lot different. I'm right now, this thing is just randomly shuts off. I've checked my graphics card. It's not my RAM. I did like a full RAM check.
That's a great feature that they included with the Catalina, was the random shut off to you know, clear the RAM and stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes things just get bogged down and you just want to immediately and suddenly shut everything down without warning the user.
Yeah.
It's a great feature.
They really listened to the support tickets on that one to include that with this release. That's very good.
Everybody was complaining about how slow they were, and it's like, we have a solution.
Excuse me, but my computer is fairly slow and seems to stay on most of the time, which is quite a big problem for me. Oh, is there any way that you could unexpectedly clear the RAM every now and then?
Oh my god. But I've had three computers and one Bitcoin node, and I'm slowly whittling down. And I think I'm going to, my node is just the Casa node. And I'm finally getting rid of an old Mac Pro that is time to say goodbye. And I think I'm going to break down one of my other computers. I don't know. I just need to stop fighting with these stupid machines.
Yes. Yeah. It's a forever war. So are you going to put a node on something else, how does this merry-go-round of electronics affect your Bitcoin presence?
Not a lot, actually. Luckily, the main thing that I use, you know, my Casa node is separate for the most part. Yeah. I have to unplug it and move some things every once in a while. And obviously, the Casa node will have its little issues. It's a Raspberry Pi, for crying out loud, you know. Like, it's not... Right. Every couple of months, something will have to be reset, you know, something hiccups. But with that, and then like Breeze being my mobile wallet and tipping, like everything else being on desktop, like I can basically get to it from any device. Everything that I've got set up, my BTC Pay server is online, it's on Luna node. So it's in the cloud. So yeah, not a whole lot. There's not a lot of interruption there, which is pretty great. You know, my Trezor works on any computer, and It's pretty cool, actually, that I can basically hot swap computers and it doesn't really do much for my Bitcoin and Lightning, and all that stuff is basically resilient against any of that. And it's just because of the plethora of software that's available that was not even close. Like at the beginning of this year? No.
Right.
That's one of the most amazing things to me. Like the big thing that I feel like 2019 did, forget all the specifics about it, watchtowers, amps now hitting, the loop in, loop out, the turbo channels, like all, just forget all the specifics. Lightning went from unusable at the beginning of the year to I use it pretty much all the time now.
Yes. Yep. And it quietly did that.
It really quietly did it. And every single time an update comes in, it gets better. Something that was like a little annoyance or like a frustration before just suddenly clears up. Something like suddenly I forget. And this is something I mentioned like with Brady, is that he was saying pretty much the same thing, that he just kind of like, he got to where like his payments don't fail anymore and it became unfamiliar for a payment to fail. Like at some point there was this threshold, and the same thing has happened for me, that I'm just expecting it to work, and then when it doesn't work, I'm like, oh shucks. Whereas previously it was, I was expecting it to fail, and when it worked I was like, oh goody. And it's now like flipped on its head, because I can depend on it to some degree, you know. Like again, it's not perfect, there's still a long way to go and a lot to do, but it's pretty amazing that it is usable. And I have used it live in real life in a checkout aisle, like, or a drive through many times, and it has gone right through. I've gotten a gift card and then spin it right at the window. And that's pretty amazing.
And you're talking specifically about Fold. I think we should mention that, 'cause that seems like a pretty cool app. I keep forgetting to use it. But JC from the Raleigh Bitcoin squad turned me onto that. I have it downloaded, and it looks rad as hell, and it sounds like it works. So if it works like everybody's talking about, it seems like a really, really cool deal. Basically, rather than purchasing, like if you go, I think Chipotle is a partner, and or Chick-fil-A or something, and rather than purchasing straight with your card, you actually purchase a gift card for that service or that product or your service, and then buy the, you know, the burrito or the sandwich with the gift card. And in the meantime, when you buy that gift card, you get cash back, but you can get it back in Lightning.
Yeah. Yeah. You get your sats back. And that's pretty cool too. You know what, that's not something I really talked about on the previous show, but was that sats back is becoming like a big thing. You know, like
it is.
That all happened this year. That's really interesting. We went from Bitcoin to sats this year. And it's because of the Lightning Network.
Yeah, you're right.
Sats was not the meme. Like it didn't work in 2018.
I'm not sure that really I'm not sure that I consciously was aware of that until we just talked about it. But yeah.
Yeah, that's it just hit me too. Which is a really that's one of those things that like it's a pretty big thing that changed, but it's so subtle that we didn't really see it, you know? Like it's hard to notice. Particularly when it's like creeping up on you. But yeah, that's been a huge new service. Fold, Lolly,
Pay,
thank you. The idea of making incremental sats back, doing the affiliate share idea that Lolly does. And Fold is great because every once in a while they always have something. Like you get like 2%, 5%, depending. You always get better on Lightning, but you can actually do it with just your credit card too. But you just don't get nearly the percentage. But they will on occasion, there's always like something that's giving like a huge discount, like 10%, 20%, 25%. And it's usually like one thing on the list. But every time Starbucks pops up with like a 20% discount, I'm buying like crazy.
What do you just buy? Do you buy bags of coffee or do you buy gift cards or?
All sorts. I mean, the 20% discount on the card with Fold, but then like I'll buy whatever, like, at Starbucks, like whether it's the coffee to get, you know, tons of coffees out of it, right, or if it's just like so I can go get drinks. But the gift cards are becoming like a. Have you seen the stuff about Paxful?
No, I mean I know Paxful, but I don't think I've seen the stuff about it.
Okay, well, there's been a number of articles recently. One on Bitcoin Magazine, one on Medium. I think it was titled. That was a good one. It got me to try out Paxful again because I've had such a horrible experience. It was the most important company nobody's paying attention to or something, or okay. I can't remember, something like that. And then Bitcoin Magazine basically iterated on the idea and expanded on it. But it's that there is a massive, like, kind of, I think some of it you could arguably call like money laundering. But like remittance and getting around like capital controls happening on Paxful with millions and millions and millions of dollars through gift cards.
Tight.
And it's happening with Venezuela and in Africa. Like they're getting these gift cards because the price of their currency in dollars is like being set. At least I know this is a huge factor into why you're getting such a good deal with somebody like country like Venezuela, is that the official rates are garbage. So
right. It's just arbitrage.
Yeah, yeah. So like, let's say they're going to get a 70% loss if they're trying to get dollars or Bitcoin with the official rate. Well, then that means that they can do it through gift cards at a 50% loss and still make out ahead, like still get it, and they sell it for Bitcoin to hold the Bitcoin, which means that on Paxful, it's real shady. There are a lot of scammers up there, but you can literally get like Amazon gift cards, Starbucks gift cards at 50% discounts.
Jeez.
Like they're buying Bitcoin with gift cards at like $11,000, $12,000 a coin.
Golly.
And I fought to get up there because scams are like really a problem up there right now. I really fought. At first I got locked out of my first account, because I'm an idiot. They make you log in with your email, and I only saved my username and my password in my password manager. And I forgot what my email address is, because when I'm using a new service that I don't know about or don't trust, I make a new email address for the service.
Do you make it in Proton Mail or something else?
Proton Mail, Tutanota, just something random.
Yeah.
Tutanota, I think, is a little bit faster and easier to make one. Proton Mail, well, no, I guess not. I don't know. I have a ton of emails. But I'll just make a random one and just be like, you know, guy's 15th email or something at tutanota.com. And
guy's international arbitrage email at guysaddress.com.
And I'll use it to sign up with the service, and then I'll just change my email if I end up using the service and it's great and, you know, I actually want it like to go onto my thing. But because I make it randomly, I forgot to store my email. I forgot to store my random made email.
Oh,
and I have no idea what it is.
Right.
I have no idea. I just pulled it out of my ass. So I had to make a new account. Got stuck in an escrow with somebody trying to scam me. I didn't realize that like 190 positive reviews were all fake, and it wasn't until like we were already starting the deal that I noticed it. I was just reading through his reviews and I was like, oh shit, these are the same people. And then I clicked on them and they're all like 2-day old accounts. And I'm like, oh shit. And I kept going deep. And then finally I would find one that was real and it would be like, this guy sold me a used gift card. He's a fucking scammer. Like, get out of here. I was like, oh no.
Trying to worm your way out of this quicksand.
I totally got stuck in escrow with this guy. And then we started fighting back and forth, and because I was like, I just want to cancel. And he's like, you can't cancel. You have to go through it. I was like, that's what's in escrow. Of course you could fucking cancel. And then he started calling me a scammer. Then he tried to market as paid and sent me a fake gift card. A whole mess. And then he reported me as a scammer, and I have no history. So now I look like a scammer. And I got stuck in the same situation with a legit guy who thought I was scamming him.
Oh, and God.
I do not recommend the experience. It's a fight. However, I proved to myself, and now that I actually have a reputation and I fought through that whole barrier, I'm probably actually going to use it now. But it requires homework and diligence to know who the hell you're working with up there. But I did, in fact, get a $500 Amazon gift card. Of course, this is probably, I shouldn't say this like too loud because I think this is against Amazon's terms of service, for like $300.
Damn.
In Bitcoin. So, wow. And I bought some Christmas presents with it. But
cool.
Yeah. So I at least got over the hump and have tested out Paxful. And that's been
so
crazy.
Paxful is dealing in gift cards? Is that what's going on?
No, it's local Bitcoins. It's exactly
local Bitcoins. Okay. And they're acting as the escrow for it?
Yeah, Paxful is the escrow. It's a really interesting service, and you know, it just comes with a lot of the problems of how do you trust somebody's reputation? Like, it's just all the normal problems of like, how do you decentralize something that requires a lot of trust typically?
Yes, right.
Who knew that was a problem?
that's pretty cool. That's power user level at that point. That might be a little bit of a bridge too far for me, but mm-hmm. The Fold thing seems cool. And yeah, see, Pay, I have Pay. I actually have Lolly too, but I don't know if I've ever technically used it. Yeah, I have Pay, and Pay's linked to my cards, and yeah, they started doing the same thing. I just noticed it recently, although it could very well be because Pay had this weird thing. I don't know if anybody mm-hmm. else has noticed this. I have Android, and Pay had
Pay
this weird
PEI, by the way.
Yeah, PEI. In case
anybody was looking it up or something.
Yeah, and they had this weird thing where, it would ping my the GPS like every 5 seconds. I think it was a bug, for local stores that were eligible, which is a good thing that it would do. You know, I wanted mm-hmm. to do that to some degree, probably not every 5 minutes because I work from home. Like I don't move around all that much, but, mm-hmm. But it would do it, and the icon would come up every single time, and it would just, and it was just really distracting if I was sitting there like reading an email on my phone or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
Whatever. So with the new version of Android that I recently downloaded, I don't know if this was a feature before or just with this one, but I was able to like be very granular about the things that certain applications ping me about. And so I was able to turn that off. So now I'm like using Pay, or I have any of the other more relevant to me notifications come through. And that's mm-hmm. something that I've noticed in the last month or two. And it could be just because of this new notification thing that I've enabled, or it may have just been doing it for a while. But in any case, the market seems to be driving actors to offer this like bonus thing, like what you were talking about. So the other day it pinged me and it was like 20% sats back for gas at participating in my local gas station as a participator. So I was like, well, I mean, I'm either gonna have to fill up today or tomorrow or, you know, next week or whatever. I don't drive all that much, but my tank's near empty. So I was like, okay, let's go do that at lunch. And so I filled it up and get 20%. You know, that's pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty rad.
Tell me how Pay works exactly. Well, so finish your thought, but then go into the specifics.
No, I'm pretty much done. So basically what it does is it's a very basic cash back system where I link a card and participating vendors will offer, you know, whatever it is to, or let me see if I can pull it up. I got the app open right now.
I actually downloaded it, but I've not actually used it.
It's super simple. And I may not be... I may not be like power using it like you perhaps would, but so they have a million, you know, participating vendors, it looks like. And like I'm just scrolling through, like In-N-Out Burger around me participates, Whataburger participates, Chick-fil-A participates, Domino's, you know, I'm just scrolling, and you know, my local gas station's 7-Eleven, and they mm-hmm. participate. And so whenever I buy using my card at one of those vendors, I assume Paygate gets a cut because they will argue to the vendor that, you know, they influenced my decision to go there. They probably mm-hmm. get 5% and then they pass on 3% or whatever, but they pass it on in the form of either cash or sats. Now I have like a dashboard that says points earned. And for instance, right now I'm at 1347.16, and that's equivalent to $13.47 or the equivalent in sats, which I have 187,340. Okay. But the catch is that you have to have 15 before you can withdraw. So you have to make it to $15. I have not yet made it to $15. I'm at 13.47 right now. So, the 20% gas, like got me a good chunk of the way, but, I mean, I've heard of people withdrawing, so I don't think I'm not worried about it being a scam. Plus it's $15. Who gives a shit anyway, but
yeah.
You know, you can withdraw in sats. Now I don't actually know. I think it's on chain. I think you withdraw on chain.
I would imagine if they had a $15 limit, if they had a reliable, you know, Lightning setup, it'd be like, why have a limit at all?
Right. Yeah. And I imagine, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see that coming down the pike.
Yeah. Particularly with Bitfinex integrating and possibly the obvious possibility of more exchanges to come, Bit Refill implementing. With them, like now we have like huge, we're getting a Wumbo channels, man. We're getting huge channels open, which, like now that like a lot of the security concerns and like, backup and like static backup and watchtower concerns have been sorted out for sort of like the enterprise side of things, like the people who can spend a little bit more money on getting the implementation custom and exactly the way they need it.
Yeah.
Now that has happened, I think we're going to see, you know, 4 Bitcoin channels, a channel with 10 Bitcoin in it, like something crazy like that.
Yeah.
And more specifically, too, like with between companies, it's way easier to do something like that because you've got an agreement. You know, the companies are obvious. Like, you know, if Bitfinex has a crash and, you know, Bit Refill ends up with all the coins, Bit Refill's not going to go, screw you, Bitfinex.
Right.
Thanks for all the coins. Like, Bitfinex Bit Refill's going to be like, all right, let's open our channel back up and I'll send it to you. You know, like, they want to keep doing business and not be known as a jackass.
Exactly. Yeah. Which I think some, you know, that's been a little bit of a knock initially. And I think that's fading away. For the folks who are like really honestly looking at it, but you know, that was always a knock. It was like, oh, wow, with Lightning, you know, you're just going to have these big corporate actors and stuff like that. It's like, well, yeah, maybe at first, but, you know, everybody will be willing to willing and able to participate. You can run your own node and so on and so forth. But the liquidity obviously will come first from those who can afford to lose it, frankly.
Yeah.
And a number of other factors, obviously, as well. But you're starting to see that fill out in the liquidity on the network. Grow, and it's really, really going to enable some really cool shit. So, I mean, this, you know, those big channel agreements are a piece of the puzzle to us getting, you know, these Lightning, these sats back. I mean, that's like a really cool feature. You know, that's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've never actually used Pay. I wonder if they're, I wonder if they're selling data at the same time too, if they're getting like the places you go to and stuff.
I'm sure.
Sucks, but like it's one of those things that like comes with the territory.
Yeah.
And it's funny. That's actually what, there was like that movie, the movie app or whatever, where you could get like $10 a month or something, or $20 a month. And you could go to the theater as many times as you wanted. You remember that one?
No, I don't.
I can't remember what it's called. It shut down now. They think they went bankrupt. What they're actually doing, their plan, their business plan was that they were tracking everyone. As soon as you downloaded the app and like you were using it to go to the theater and stuff, they were tracking and keeping data on everywhere that you went, like before and after the movie and all of this stuff, so that they could sell data to advertisers and developers, like business developers and all this stuff, who would know like, okay, which place did you eat before the movie? Did you eat after the movie? Where'd you go? Was it near the theater? Was it right in front of the theater? Was it 10 minutes away? Like, you know, all this stuff, which is also really fascinating data to have. It's like one of those things that like, as somebody who is fascinated by data and stuff, I want somebody to write an article about that and detail all this shit. But then the security and privacy person in me is like, how dare you? How right. dare you take all of this information? So it's like, I really want to know what all that information is, but yeah, you're an asshole, but let me know. Yeah. Tell me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That is true. There's always those, depending on how cypherpunk you want to get, there's always those concerns. I'm scrolling through because I have record of all my, now obviously it has access to my GPS. So technically it could be tracking. Well, you know, you could go down the rabbit hole of the things that it could be tracking with all the sensors. But
I have 73 apps. Those are the candidates.
Yeah, right.
Also, maybe Apple.
Yeah. Most of it, almost all of them, are from that 7-Eleven. It's all me getting gas. pretty much.
That's funny.
Yeah, gas or the Chipotle around the corner. I don't get out and. You know, my purchases are basically from the grocery store, gas for my car, and the occasional eating out, and that's about it.
My purchases come in with Amazon, food and groceries,
yeah,
and then drinks,
yeah,
drinks and Ubers to Bitcoin meetups.
Oh yeah. I think Uber is a partner with Pay too. I don't know if that influences your decision.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No, that definitely influences. Well, I was still going to just take the hit anyway. In fact, I'm trying to get a duplicate phone. And I've had a lot of people, I'm trying to up my OPSEC a little bit, but mm-hmm. not lose a lot of the convenience. Have you ever heard of the thing that like Australia is doing? I think it was that you have to unlock your, like if they request a password to your computer or like to a USB, that you have to unlock it.
I didn't know Australia specifically, but I've seen this as a general like talking point and movement that people are doing, and it's freaking me the hell out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it was like Jameson Lopp or somebody, but like the start of this conversation, and then it just really got me thinking. I was like, you know, I really should do this too. This is really smart because you can do this all throughout your life. Is have a and I do this with my emails. I do this all the time, actually, online. I use this theory of creating a throwaway thing that I know is exposed, and I use that for certain things. And, you know, like when I'm going to certain websites that I don't trust, just like the throwaway emails, you know, the Paxful example is earlier, and then have my normal one. That's my trusted presence online, with the trusted arrangements that I know is my normal, like reliable, network. And, so have yourself a travel laptop that just doesn't have anything on it.
Yeah.
Have yourself a travel mobile phone that, you know, you just plop a SIM card in.
Yeah.
And I've never really figured that out. And I had always heard that you could do that, but I finally, broke down and bought myself a SIM card, and I'm going to get just like a low cost smartphone that will run apps, that will run something like Pay or, you know, whatever it is. Then, you know, like I can take that out when I know I'm going to be tracked and I need to be for some reason, and just separate it from something else. You know, like I can just kind of separate my level of control into, is this a track me day or is this a, I'm just going to not deal with that today.
Right. And I think that's like the way that a lot of this stuff is going to go. I think that the cost of, I don't want to say fraudulently because it's not fraud by any stretch, mm-hmm. but strategically misrepresenting your own information, the cost mm-hmm. of that is going to become so low that the people that are truly it's going to become very cheap to add a lot of noise to the signal, to the point mm-hmm. where that type of activity by surveillers is going to potentially be, you know, disincentivized. So hopefully,
and I think I think it's going to continue to drop. I think you're right that just the cost of choosing not to share something will get less, which mm-hmm. right now it's been getting progressively worse, but I think we're seeing a tipping point. I think we're actually starting to shift. Unfortunately, I think the surveillance state and it's more of a divergence that, you know, it's becoming two different ecosystems sort of.
Yeah.
And because of that, hold on 2 seconds.
Sure.
But it's like, so it's kind of getting worse in, the normal, like legacy system, but I think the barrier for like using the alternatives or finding the alternatives and the plethora of options is in fact falling. Like gift cards are a fascinating example, like Paxful, just the ability to get around stuff like that with something seemingly so simple and, it would seem like that would not be an obvious tool to use for that, but turns out it is. I really hope that it continues to work in the favor of privacy and actually controlling your presence and, you know, what the hell you choose other people to see or know about you. Because it's gotten really bad. And for a long time, I was worried there was no way out of it, that we were just all screwed. And we were going to have to just come to terms with that was the new world. And to some degree, you do, you know, obviously. But you can mitigate a lot more of it than you used to be able to, I think.
I think so too. I think one cool technology that, you know, could be a quick fix potentially, although there would be ways around it, would be something like, you know, how Cold Card has, if you enter a preset wrong PIN, it will open to a wallet that has some Bitcoin, but not all of your Bitcoin.
Yeah. The fake, dummy wallet,
yeah,
or whatever.
The dummy, yeah. Like that's something that could offer a brief solution until they figured out, you know, a way around it, but a brief solution towards, you know, when you're, whenever I've seen this, it's with crossing a border, an international border. And if you set a preset PIN, it basically just opens in guest mode or something like that, you know, on your phone. But I don't know if I certainly wouldn't trust that. I would rather just have a different device, but you know, there's always,
particularly people, if you have to hand over your device or something like that's like,
that's that whole, that, you know, the night is Darkest Before Dawn type of thing. I gotta believe, like, I can't.
Oh yeah.
The idea of someone taking your personal stuff and looking through it. Although I guess they're doing that with your luggage and stuff like that, but there's something way more intimate about your phone because it has your communications with other people. And man, so just so bizarre. You know, and so completely just fucking unnecessary, you know, just don't. Yeah. Well,
the idea that the absurdity that it makes anybody safer.
Right. Yeah. Like they're going to
probably the big issue.
Yes. Well, we got him. We got him.
And the key difference, even though I think going through your luggage is messed up. And to some degree, like if we had a market, I don't think that would happen even close to the way it happens. With the difference in your luggage is that your luggage is the stuff that you just carry with you when you're traveling. It's just the stuff that you're bringing with you. Your laptop or your phone is everything you've ever done. It's your whole history. It's your whole life. It's your banking. It's your finance. Like, you know, I don't put the safe in my closet in my luggage and take it with me when I'm traveling. Like secret sexy stuff, you know, condoms, stuff like that.
You're unmentionable.
Unmentionables. Good Lord. What is wrong with me in words today?
I can't believe two things that I came up with it. And that was actually the word that you were thinking of.
That's a boomer word, isn't it?
Yeah. That's good.
I don't put like a bunch of embarrassing stuff in my luggage. Like I'm just traveling. But your computer, like Jesus, people.
Yeah.
Like that's such an invasion of privacy. It's so insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I've seen your computer. A lot of unmentionables.
So many.
So many.
It's overflowing with them,
really.
All right. So while you wonder what on earth I'm keeping on my computer, let's take a break right here and hit our sponsor and we'll jump back in.
So we got anything else that we're wrapping up 2019 with? I mean, it's, as we've said, it does feel like this has been kind of like the quiet, productive year where the water's filling in between the sand, as you're pouring, whatever that metaphor is. And we're filling in a lot of those gaps that just make using Bitcoin and Bitcoin affiliated stuff easier and more accessible and more desirable. And then 2020, obviously, if we kind of look at a typical market cycle around a halving, it's likely to be a little bit more openly exciting, even to bring more people into the space. Whereas 2019 may, although I'm sure a lot of people came in this year, that's not how the year before a halving is typically billed as a huge growth year. So the next 2 years should be just really, really cool. Going into a huge year or two like this, as we expect to, or as I expect to, with the added capabilities that will keep in mind, keep growing, of the Lightning Network, I think is going to be really interesting to see people just rapidly onboarded and able to immediately use Bitcoin for stuff like on these apps and buy gift cards and buy actual stuff and really use it. It should be really fascinating. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, dude, I'm totally with you on the next 2 years are going to be crazy. And bear markets are really just some of the nicest times. Like yes, the price is painful. Yeah. And, you know, if you're paying attention to all of that crap and, you know, you think that that's the important stuff or that's your focus, obviously it's going to suck. And from that perspective, bear markets are terrible. But things get quiet, you know, like people stop screaming and like all the noisy people who weren't there for any really good reason anyway, leave. It's the whole signal to noise thing. The signal just gets clean. And I was actually just talking to somebody about Bitcoin, who knew. I was just talking about how great it feels right now because so much is being built and everybody's leaving us alone. Like it's kind of all quiet on the Western front sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so the infrastructure and the tools that I think we're going to have in this next run are going to be just insane.
Yeah.
And as I know somebody is doing it right now. I don't know if Breeze is working on it in the background. I don't know who's going to do it first. Olympus and Jack Mallers with Zap and everything. This, I love everything that he's doing over there. Bit Refill is moving a mile a minute. Every week they're implementing something new. No doubt amps are going to be on LND soon, and everybody's going to be putting that in all the software. And then there's a Moon Wallet, which actually atomic swaps in and out, like does a loop in and loop out with the wallet so that you can, it just looks like a normal Bitcoin wallet, but you can pay Lightning invoices because you do an atomic swap with somebody on Lightning.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's accessible to Lightning. It turns Lightning and Bitcoin into one. You just don't see the difference.
Yeah.
There's so many of these little pieces of these things that are all over the place, but there will be a very short span of time, I think, when it's all in one, when we see a couple of major tools come out that just use it all together. And when that happens, the whole experience is going to change.
Yep.
To be able to just send Bitcoin to my Breeze wallet or out, like pay a Bitcoin invoice, pay a SegWit address, pay a BEC32 address, pay a Lightning invoice, pay a HODL HTLC, like anything. I just scan it. And if it's something to do with Lightning or Bitcoin, the app chooses what the quickest route to get there is.
Yeah. Yep. No, agreed. Agreed. And it's like that in, and it seems like any industry, like in the early phases, every one company or project team has like some element of the full picture, but then somebody comes like what immediately comes to mind for me. And I'm sure that there were other competitors that were maybe just as good or better, but for me, like GoPro, that was like photography. Oh, yeah. And videography had been, you know, there were pieces all over the place, but then they came in, they made this low cost, incredible unit. And it was like, okay, this is incredible. Like, this is really cool for someone who's into action sports. It was like, okay, I can now take this and reasonably record stuff that, you know, and just in any industry, it's like somebody comes in and is just like, let's take all of this and make it good. Like really good and usable. And
yeah.
So I'm sure that we are not, you know, we're very close to that. And I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah, dude. GoPro is a great example actually, because even with like digital photography and stuff, that it changed a lot, but it didn't change the nature of what was filmed and like what was taken pictures of, like really the context, like the content itself, didn't have a huge shift. It slowly started to shift because
hey.
Good lord. Packages, hold on.
Oh god.
Holy crap. Okay.
That's the double-edged sword of Amazon, huh?
Oh yeah. They're always giving me packages. What? Yeah.
GoPro. You were talking about GoPro and how
GoPro. Yeah. And this is my film nerd coming out.
That's right. You have a pretty big background in this, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it didn't change the content. Like as the cameras got smaller, you could do more with them. And so you did get to see it in the hands of more people, and then it got cheaper, and you got to see more creativity and more independent films. Like independent films were a huge rarity, and now you can actually, there's a lot of great quality independent work out there. New production companies have popped up all over the place. All the streaming services are producers now. Everybody's producing content.
Yeah.
And this YouTube web series, like the explosion just for the cost has been pretty amazing. But when it finally went to GoPro, like the fact that you mentioned this is great, just because I love to geek out on this stuff too, was that it changed what was filmed.
Yes.
Like you were no longer, the camera was now there. Like it was part of everything as opposed to a bystander. And it changed like being able to just easily throw this thing on a drone and get beautiful shots. Like some of the, like the crane shots and stuff that you do on like a feature film used to be exorbitantly expensive. And now anyone can literally for a couple of $100 get what is the equivalent of $1 million crane shot 20 years ago.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And there's, and I've got a, I mean, a great firsthand example is my, my profile picture, on Twitter is probably from, I don't know when the first GoPro came out. I probably was in college. I didn't have a lot of money, but, my profile picture is probably from 2007 or 2008. And, it's me surfing and, it's, so it's out in the water. I'm looking at the photo and I guarantee you that the photo is a scan. I just found them randomly. But it, it's a disposable waterproof camera. I guarantee it. And that 2007, 2008, wasn't that long. I mean, it was 10 years ago. Right. And, yeah. And now, and then I'm thinking back and the first GoPro footage I have is probably from the GoPro three, is of me snowboarding and it's like 1080, you know, high def right there on a pole, like snowboarding down, you know, in Vail. And it's just beautiful, beautiful footage. And I'm looking back 5 years prior and it's me with a waterproof disposable camera. And that just goes to your point of like, of it changed what was filmed. I mean, there was no other way. Like, yeah, you could go spend 500, but before the GoPro, I mean, I don't know what it would take, but you would certainly be scared to take it out into the water.
Yeah. Yeah. And now like even my little Osmo Pocket, which I love playing around with, that's my only camera now. I actually sold all my previous setup, which was a sad day, but I had to, Bitcoin already took it from me,
right?
Consumed all my time. But Osmo Pocket has a little waterproof thing and it's so, I mean, they call it a pocket cause you can put it in your pocket. It's a little Steadicam and, 4K camera.
I've never heard of this. It's 4K.
You haven't heard of the Osmo Pocket?
No.
Yeah, it's 4K. You can do all sorts of other stuff with it because, I mean, it's got a little computer. You can update for like new features and stuff. They do panoramas and huge like landscape shots that take like 9 different pictures and stitch it into one. You shoot 4K, you can shoot like 60 frames, I think, in 1080p or something. So you can get really good slow motion. And it's got a tiny little gimbal on it.
What?
So it's a Steadicam. Yeah. So you're walking around and it's just smooth as silk.
No way. What are
these? It's not even that expensive. It's like $399.
Damn. Holy shit. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's great little camera.
That's cool. That's cool. So I hope that 2019 or 2020 kind of sees that, you know, the GoPro of wallets and you know, just with the user interface, the usability and the features and stuff like that, that would be really, really cool. And even if some of it's custodial, just to drive the innovation and drive the competition in that area, it'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully it leads to a lot more, Bitcoin content on my side. That's what I'm trying to get back into. I'm trying to do the video thing again, but mostly I just don't have, I'm spending too much time reading. I need to cut back maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think we've discussed this before, but you can't miss a beat or else you're just going to be so damn behind on anything. It's moving so fast. You're going to get to the point where you're going to have to pick like, an area that you're reporting on, you know, it's
probably,
we're just on the verge of just some, cause you know, it's going to be used in the weirdest ways that we're not thinking about right now. And there, you know, it's one of those things like it's just going to if it goes the way that we think it is, it's going to explode. It's going to be so tough to keep up with, but, I'm glad you're here doing it.
Okay. So you said before that you did not know about Eurochain.
No, I forgot about this.
And that's the official name. I'm pretty sure that was what the ECB hashtagged, Eurochain. And I can't remember. I tried to find it again because I want to download the white paper, but they actually have a white paper. And it is the ECB is making a digital currency. And a quote unquote cryptocurrency on a blockchain. Actually uses Bitcoin's UTXO model, which is a little strange for the fact that it's like not decentralized at all. Like,
I mean, is it going to be auditable?
No. Users, okay. It will be a like API access to trusted banking institutions, and it is literally an Orwellian nightmare. Banks can freeze accounts. The ECBs can freeze accounts. You can block transactions. They have a key to basically edit anything. And of course, users can't see anything. And because it's a blockchain based, all transactions are tied together, and they're going to require built in KYC to larger transactions. And then there was actually the concept, which this sounds idiotic, but anonymity coupons that you can get these, and I do not know the ins and outs of how this thing, but it's total idiocy, because you're not, who you get an anonymity from? You don't have it from the ECB or the bank. So then the idea that you're just going to be allocated a certain amount of privacy that they get to judge is hilarious on its face. But some sort of anonymity coupons where you can do small private transactions and it's not broadcast to everybody. I don't know. It's scary. All the details of it just sound like just the worst thing that I would never, just who would want that? Who even thinks that they're, I don't know, maybe the arrogance of being in that position and thinking that you're the thing that runs the world. You know, I'm the finance of planet Earth.
You're raising your eyebrows, man, but a lot of people think like that. And I'm not saying the banks, I know why they're thinking that and what they're thinking, but a lot of people are just going to look at it and be like, well, this is backed up by the banks. And this is, I've banked with them for 60 years. And a shitload of people are going to think that. Not saying it'll get off the ground or succeed. I kind of think that their own incompetence will probably limit that to some degree, but that mindset still is the prevailing mindset in the world. And we spend a lot of time and it's a little bit of a cliche, but in our little echo chamber, but you get outside of that. And I mean, my meat space friends don't really get Bitcoin still. And it's I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it'll. It's one of those things that it's going to happen. Whatever that saying is, first slowly and then all at once. I think to some degree it'll be like that. But, you spend enough time with your Bitcoin friends and you forget how
regular people think.
I'm serious, and it's not in a condescending way. It's just a completely different. Like, there are people that are really into model trains or something like that, and if I were to go, hang out with them, they'd be like, oh my god, I forgot that people just don't know model trains, or any niche hobby. And Bitcoin certainly is, despite how big it is in our world and how big it's gotten and how promising it looks, it is still pretty niche. It's a small thing.
I think more important,
I think not for long, but it still is there.
Definitely. I think the bigger, your example with the trains, that's present all over the place. But what's Bitcoin itself is a worldview shift in a huge way. So it's not just we're not familiar with each other's terms or focus or care about the same thing. It's also, we look at the exact same things completely differently. This as A, and I look at it and it's clearly B, that makes the divide even worse. So when I'm hanging out with you or Bitcoin buddies, I go back to normal land and I'm like, holy crap, this is jarring.
I know. And I try to think back to when I did not think like that and how jarring it would have been for me to hear it. Probably fairly jarring, but you say things off the cuff accidentally in normal space and people look at you like you got 10 heads and you're like, well, yep, actually that was psychotic if you're not oriented with.
Ooh, I see how that sounds now. Let me walk this back. Come back to reality.
I am sorry. It's one of those like a service dog vest. Like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be petted or something.
I am terribly sorry. You think I'm insane. You should not have had a conversation with me.
Oh, Jesus. Oh God. Well, I don't know. That sounds like as good a place as any to end the 2019 episode. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up? There was Trump tweeted about Bitcoin this year, and shitcoins are official lexicon of the congressional floor. Those were both just glorious moments.
Well,
those happened this
year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's been not to launch back into it, but it curiously, especially during a bear year, it has infiltrated into even the normie political land. And we have to talk about Richards. What was it? Brad Sherman.
Oh yeah, that man's crazy.
Yeah. He's the interesting thing is that he's. Well, he is crazy from our worldview, but he's honest
about his. Yeah.
Disturbingly honest. And that's that. I wonder how that, because he said loudly what everybody says quietly or just thinks. And I just wonder how his opinion is going to be handled largely by political agents, you know, going forward, because that he said exactly what the deal is. And you know,
he didn't give the marketing tactic of covering it up with pretty words and it's for poverty and, you know, all
terrorism
this
or whatever. Yeah.
He said, no, our power comes from our ability to manipulate the currency that other people are forced to use. So, and that's not something like I can see like everybody like out the table or behind the you know stand and everything behind him like sitting up there in the front. It's like, what are you doing, dude? No, why are you saying this out loud?
Shut up! Shut the fuck up!
You're being recorded right now. Oh God, what do we do? Let's cut to commercial. Do we not do that here?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it was bizarre. So I encourage anybody to go. Look that up. I mean, well, I say it was bizarre. It was only bizarre that I heard a political agent say it. It was dead on accurate. It was, and there was nothing wrong about it. It was just strange to hear it said. And I wonder, you know, going forward, it's like they're going to have to make marketing plays to make Bitcoin the bad guy. And I'm wondering, like, obviously terrorism, I'm sure is going to be drugs. But I wonder if people are going to have slip ups like that. And I do wonder if we're going to be able to watch in real time, like senators and congressmen and stuff like that, and media folks and stuff. And, you know, everybody who's part of the cathedral kind of come to terms with what money is and what fiat currency is accidentally, you know,
have to explain it for the first time.
Yeah, so, yeah, and that might be a really, really interesting narrative of 2020, or it might not. I don't know, but that could be cool, because you know, you got to believe that there are, like, I know that we always like to bag, or at least over at Friends Against Government, we always like to bag on the media quite a bit. But there are some really honest folks in the media, and they're rarer than we'd like them to be. But there's honest and relatively smart and curious folks in the media. And you got to wonder, like, when they're confronted with something like this, are they going to, is it going to spark the curiosity? And are they going to accidentally say things that they shouldn't? And so it could very well be that 2020 or perhaps 2021 I would argue 2020 is probably going to be the year of gaffes, of people saying things out loud that they probably shouldn't be saying because they just don't understand why they shouldn't be saying them. You know?
Yeah. That's been happening more and more frequently. And I think I've always thought that Bitcoin could play an important part in that story. Of just kind of Trojan horsing ideas that have either been hidden or like specifically just, we're not going to talk about it. You know, it's just going to sit there and this, we're not going to bring it up. And then, you know, more specifically on like getting people to ask what the hell money is, to like have to clarify something that's always just been an assumption.
Yep. And it cranks up the heat, because as it increases in value, and obviously as it increases in use case, and obviously as more and more merchants and bigger players get on board, there's more and more incentive for everyone to get on board. And so people, you're going to be fighting this battle of, you're going to have to explain to, you know, the common man why they shouldn't be involved in this. And you're going to have to be, you're going to be saying like terrorism and drugs, and they're going to be getting sats back on their pay app. And they're going to be like, what? What are you talking about? You know? Yeah. And so that could be really, really cool to watch too. That's going to be a fascinating, it's just going to be fascinating to watch the chess moves unfold. And the interesting thing is that Bitcoiners in some sense aren't even a chess player. We're manufacturing the chess set, and it's like the cathedral is playing the people in the pews, it's going to be just really, really weird.
Yeah. I feel like it's going to be one of those things like trying to stand a wall up in front of a tsunami. It's everything's going to go through, like in your analogy that they're not like really a chess player, is that the Bitcoiners aren't a chess player in this. If you look at the government as trying to hold back the ocean from, you know, getting like from filtering its way into Bitcoin and the tide is rising, the Bitcoiners and the architecture, everybody designing and developing these things and making these new tools are kind of messing with the terrain. So it's like, if I can take your ground out from under you, it doesn't matter what you can do with the wall or how quickly you can build one.
The water's getting in.
Yeah, the water's going to filter in, and there's not much you could do about it.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. Man. I don't know. So we'll see. We're looking forward to 2020, and I've got just about 609,000 total blocks in the node, and we've got the halving coming up in May, which is at what, 630? 630,000 blocks?
200. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. So
if I can count by 21 three times.
Yeah. So we'll be going down to 6.25 block reward, right? Is that right?
6.5. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. We're 12.5. We'll go to 6.25.
Yeah. So,
and we'll be touching on gold's heels.
Yeah, that's right. It'll be the inflation rate will be, stock to flow will be basic. I mean, broad numbers, it'll be in line with gold.
Nipping at the heels in 2028. Oof. Next 3 or 4 years are going to be crazy, particularly I think we get into the next bear market, is to see what does stop it, what does develop, because I think there will be a backlash. Like, I think we are, you know, first they laugh at you, then they what's the process? We're at the stage.
Yeah.
I think we're leading our way into the then they fight you. And then we'll win. So it's exciting. And I think it's an unstoppable thing. Like the technology is just not going to be uninvented. And I really hope it happens this time.
Me too.
You know?
Me too.
I hope we don't have to wait another 10 years and 2 iterations or something, but whatever. Yeah. All we can do is our best and keep running with it.
Yeah, I mean that's it, and hopefully, I'm more and more confident with every passing day, and you know, obviously with the math, every confirmed block is creates a higher probability of continued success, I guess. So, we'll get through this halving, and are you familiar with he's a miner. And I always see him bagging on the stock to flow model on Twitter. And he tweets out some paranoid shit about the halving with respect to mining every now and then. And I don't know. I don't agree with a lot of his approach to the stock to flow model is kind of bizarre, especially for an engineer. And so I don't know whether he's really smart and seeing something that I'm not, or if he's kind of paranoid and letting that lead the way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand. It's not like I disrespect, I'm not trying to disrespect the guy. I'm just trying to figure out where he's at.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, from a personal perspective, from a selfish perspective in the, sitting in a minor's seat, is that I can specifically see being very afraid or very concerned about the having. And also from the general idea that, the quote unquote security is going to get cut in half.
Yeah.
Or the payout. But that's why we have the difficulty adjustment. That's why this thing is part of an open market. And we've done this twice before.
Right.
Everybody's freaking out again.
Well,
and everybody freaked out the last two times.
Right.
I remember these conversations. Everybody said there's going to be a death spiral. Everybody says it's done,
And that comes up. It's not just that we've done it twice. We've done it twice plus with the Bitcoin Cash thing too. That was a
big
death spiral thing, thing as well. I mean, I get why you would look at it in static from now and say, "Ooh, this looks a little bit dicey." But yeah, I mean, the difficulty adjustment is there. You just got to believe that we're going to push through another one just by, in an emergency, people are going to fire up miners or do whatever they need to do to get this thing across the line to the next difficulty adjustment.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but there's always that. There's always, it's the people who are scared and smart and competent that get you thinking. While I disagree with a lot of what he's said, it's Steve something. And now that I'm thinking about it,
okay,
I can look it up on Twitter. I think I follow him. But
I was about to say, if you find it, just shoot it to me in a DM. I'm curious.
Yeah, yeah. He very much approaches it from a minor angle, which I understand because that's his business. I think he does oil energy reclamation through mining.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So everything I see from him is always from a miner's angle, which I understand because that's his area of expertise. But I do. So when he talks about the stock to flow model, he's like, why doesn't it include fees? And it's like, well, that's not what the model is. I don't know, model it with fees and see if there's a higher correlation. And I just see him in there banging his head against the wall. Why doesn't this include fees? That's relevant. It's like, well, a lot of things are relevant, but this is this model. And there's a high level of correlation. So that's why this model is this model. You can throw fees in there if you want, and there's a mathematical way to determine whether that correlates more or less, but this is this model. So,
I don't know if, I don't see how the fees really apply because
they don't to in my mind. I mean, not to, you wouldn't, because that would be measuring velocity in some sense, or I don't know. I haven't really thought exactly what the fees would represent, but I anytime I see him comment on it, I'm obsessive about the thread and reading it because I'm trying to figure out where he's coming from, and I'm not sure if I've been able to hone in on it.
Because fees are just for transactions. It's kind
right.
of like it's kind of like if because they're separate jobs, so it's hard to come up with a good analogy. But if you had a gold miner that was mining new gold into existence, but then also they were running a merchant services Visa that just happened to be out of the same building, and they were getting paid small fees in gold, you wouldn't count that in their flow just because it was the same company getting the thing. It's just a paid for a service,
right?
It's stock that's already there, just circulating for its use of moving bitcoins, which it could also just be used to buy crap on Amazon. You wouldn't count that in the flow,
right?
It's not new bitcoins, so yeah, I don't see how
understand where the place that it has in that model. I don't understand why you would take something like stock to flow and then introduce I don't know what the fees would represent in that model or how to properly integrate them if you were. Now granted, if you come up with a model that correlates higher than stock to flow, I'm curious. I want to read about it.
To me, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I have and maybe I haven't followed it closely enough, but I have not seen him propose a model other than just saying, hey, we need to incorporate fees. And I don't, and you know, there's a lot of like easy, kind of attack points on stock to flow that I see people dive to, you know, kind of over and over again. And like, one is like, well, theoretically it's going to be worth infinity because you know, whatever. And it's like, yeah, well, okay. I mean, granted that I think plan B always intended the stock to flow to basically end at 2028, or after 2028. Mm-hmm. And so there is some kind of time limit on it.
You know, what's funny? I don't think so. I think those are just kind of mental barriers. And here's the reason why.
Okay.
Is its value isn't going to go up, but its price
right.
will.
Yeah,
through infinity. So what happens is like, yeah, in terms of dollars, like it will just be that it won't have a price in dollars anymore. Like your price will be in Bitcoin, and then that will essentially be, you know, one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin infinity.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, to some extent there will be like, there is a price to value ratio that will stop.
Mm-hmm.
But that will just be in the prices of goods. That will be when it reaches max capacity in the market that can use it for commerce. And that will be based on how wide the network can spread, how robust the infrastructure, just how many people it can handle. So in a sense, the stock to flow itself isn't wrong on the going to infinity. It's just that we're thinking about it and it's going to just skyrocket in what I can buy with it forever. And it's like, no, in relative prices, once it becomes the dominant good, then things, the model breaks down only because it's what we're concerned with is purchasing power, not just a nominal point. The other thing is that I think like it's about like a bunch of people are like, oh, well, it doesn't account for this or, you know, fees or whatever, like they're trying to fit these other things in it. The idea is that it correlates incredibly well right now. It correlates better than gold does, you know, like it's an incredibly high correlation. So the question is, when we incorporate those things, is it better or is it worse? So that's the question. It's if it doesn't work better with those things, well, then those things shouldn't be correlated. And we should figure out why
mm-hmm.
those get in the way of the correlation, why those are less representative of reality. Like we should be looking at the model, like the clearest model should inform us what we should think, in which direction we should go. What we think in the direction we want to go should not inform what we think should be in the model or what should be a successful model. Like we should be observing this thing essentially. I don't know. I hope that kind of came across right.
Yeah.
Whatever works.
No, I think that's kind of where I'm at is like it's an observational thing. And while it serves as an interesting point for prediction,
mm-hmm.
that I think is something that I see a lot as well, as people being like, well, there's no way to predict. And it's like, well, yeah, I know. I mean, you know, there isn't,
obviously,
but you know, that we take that for granted, that's just the case. And you just look for things that successfully model it. This seems to be a very good model. And so it's an interesting, a data point to incorporate. And some people just, I don't know. I don't get it. At any rate, I do think he's got some really interesting points about correlating, price per kilowatt hour and correlating mm-hmm. that with Bitcoin. I think I've seen some really interesting stuff in there, and I want to dig into more what he's talking about with respect to that. And so anyway, his Twitter handle is SGBARBOUR. So Steve
okay.
Barbour or something like that. He's Canadian, but
Barbour.
Yeah. So, Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. It's interesting stuff. We're all kind of grappling with data and a lot of it and quickly. And so it's interesting to see what other smart people come up with, you know?
Yeah. I'll definitely check that out. I'd be really curious to what his position is. And I'd like to see somebody do it with fees, do the stock to flow with fees included and see if it's a better match. If it, you know, if we can discern more useful data from it,
right,
or some better correlation. Because I'd really like to see it. I haven't seen one that's comes close to
right.
that, to stock and flow yet.
I think
all the into and the whatchamacallit, the NVR, the NV, the nominal value to relative value, NVRV or something. Oh, God bless. I can't remember what all the old models of. I've been stuck in stock and flow now. But this is the best one so far,
right?
So
yeah, it's
all you have to do is give a better one.
It's
right?
weird, exactly. It's weird to like shoot holes in something when all you would have to do if you have a better idea is just model it and see if it's better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if it's a very simple process, just model it with your points and see if there's a higher correlation. Like, you know, I don't know what to tell you. It's really really very simple. But you know. Nonetheless, I guess that's the way that Twitter is. But anyway, yeah.
Twitter is the criticism, the criticism machine.
Yeah,
it is there to produce as much criticism and triggering as possible.
Yeah,
and it is good at it.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is. And a lot of it's for good. You know, a lot of it is for good. And
oh yeah,
keeps people honest. Yeah. Keeps the discussion healthy most of the time. But that is one
keeps
thing,
things fun.
Yeah, yeah. But that is one thing that's fascinating about something that's like it's very easy to check your work. Like just do it the way that you're talking about and see if it correlates better. Like, yeah,
trust, verify.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. So I'm sure Plan B will give you all of his raw data. Like, go get that, add one more variable and just see. I don't know, it's ridiculous.
Maybe I'll do it. maybe if I figure out, I don't know how to deal with any of that stuff, the querying tons of data and stuff and make it simple. But maybe you could do it pretty easy. Maybe I'll just borrow Plan B. Maybe I'll just shoot him a message. We'll see.
Yeah. Have you read anything from him?
Yeah, well, I've read his original stock to flow article.
Okay,
on the show.
I may have missed that.
And talked about it. I don't think I read the quote unquote rebuttal. It wasn't really a rebuttal. It was a let's start from scratch and like remodel it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, like, do I get the exact same results as he does? Basically,
okay.
And what's funny is that one, or falsifying. I think that's how they worded it. They actually turned out that they actually produced a better fit model.
Oh, cool.
That was based off. Like, they reproduced the data and, showed that Plan B was basically right about like everything that he did and produced essentially the same results. Except that theirs was, I don't remember exactly what the difference was, theirs was a little bit tighter, and they actually estimated a higher price as opposed to a lower one.
Oh, wow.
Okay. In their model. So yeah. I have not read that one on the show. I did read it, but I can't remember some of the details because I didn't read it six times in recording and then talk about it afterward. That's how you retain most. That's how I try to retain my stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it was a good one. That was a good one there.
Well, it'll be interesting to see as we go into the halving if stock to flow is reasonably adequate or how it holds on that. And I think is it Marty Bent that's been doing the modeling the deviation away from the predicted stock to flow price? Somebody.
Yeah. He made a bot.
Yeah.
He just did that the other
day. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like relatively new when I saw it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really exciting. We're at like 0.25 off or something right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I haven't like dug into it to like understand exactly how to read it or anything. I just saw that he did it and I conceptually understand what he did. I haven't dug into it yet. But it looks cool.
Yeah, that's what I've actually been going by lately for I'm gonna see how long it actually like works. But for my anticipation of whether or not it's going to go up or down, it's how long it's been underneath or over top of the stock to flow.
Okay.
Since Plan B, there's a there's actually a link. I should probably just post this out as a tweet someday. Because it took me a long time to find it, even though everybody's like, "Oh, it's out there." But you can just find live charts of the stock to flow with tons of data, like crammed in. This is one of the most dense charts, like ever, for like how far we are to the next halving, what the stock to flow is, what the Bitcoin price. I've just a whole stack of stuff with colors and sizes and you know, lines and all that crap. But it's great. You can just sit there and look at it and just slowly discern information, just because there's so much packed in. But yeah, we're under it right now, so I don't think we're gonna. I'm not so bearish. We've been under it for a little while and we're kind of chilling and we got support. Everybody's like, we're going to 1,000. I'm like, man, nah.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Nah, I don't think so. I think we're going to hang out here and disappoint everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Not go low enough for all the hungry hodlers and not go high enough for the swing traders and price
for the Lambos.
Yeah, the Lambos. yeah. That's my guess. It never goes quite as low as you think. And, or as you want, almost, so I don't know.
Never goes to the moon you're thinking of.
Yeah. I don't know. We got anything else?
No, I don't think so. The only other thing that I've got on my list that we didn't get into was the other thing with privacy with Binance.
Are you talking about
GD or
you talking? Oh yeah, are you talking about with Wasabi?
The withdrawal.
Yeah, we should briefly touch on that. Do you use Wasabi?
I have Wasabi, but I've never I've done like one thing with it, but I'm trying to reset it and start from scratch to like really dig into it and use it a couple of times. So I've very briefly like dabbled, but no, not to any extent. Like I don't use it, no.
I do. Not that I'm like overly concerned about this particular issue with respect to my life, but it is something that I am concerned about on just overall in general on privacy. But I guess just I'll sum it up and then we can discuss it. It looks like somebody was trying to withdraw their Bitcoin from, and I didn't Binance. It's Binance something, right?
Yeah. It's like, I can't remember. It's like three.
Is it some, like, is it some country's version?
Something like that. I guess so. I don't know, because it's Binance US is the US version.
Right.
I assume that's probably
maybe. Was it like SGP? Was it Singapore or something?
Maybe. Okay. That, I could believe that. I can buy that right now. We'll find out.
In any case, a user was trying to withdraw their Bitcoin to a BC1 address that Wasabi uses by default. I don't even think you can use a 3 address, and I certainly don't think you can use a 1. They were withdrawing it to a BC1 address, and Binance basically flagged the withdrawal. And was it trying to force them to go through some sort of KYC or it?
No, they just said that it was like it was freeze the withdrawal and like flag, and then they had to contact Binance to get like details. And they responded with, it looks like you're withdrawing to Wasabi, and I can't remember exactly what they said, like they were going to require or something. Like, I think they were like, you're going to have to explain, maybe they were like KYCing you. Here it is. I found it. Okay. With the withdrawal to my Bitcoin address, suspended due to risk management. We performed a periodic review on your account and have a few questions with regard to your account activities that may help us enhance the security and maintenance of your account. We hope to receive your reply within 72 hours to expedite this process. We noticed cryptocurrency withdrawals to wasabiwallet.io, which upon our review is a mixing private wallet provider with a total amount of blob Bitcoin. The addresses are as follows. So he didn't. Oh yeah, kindly explain what is the purpose of withdrawing the above funds to Wasabi. Kindly advise us of the following and provide any supporting documents: your current occupation, your annual income range, zero to 1,000, 1,000 to 3,000, 3,000 above 20,000. Best regards, Binance Singapore. You were right. Hey, Singapore support team. Yeah. So they're just like, what are you doing? Yeah.
And so for those not familiar with Wasabi, it has CoinJoin service built into it. So it makes it very, very easy to CoinJoin through their service. And so it's a very, the intent of Wasabi is to be a very privacy oriented wallet. And so the immediate questions were, and this was borne out in the Twitter chain and Twitter thread. And I actually saw this because you retweeted or you quote tweeted it today or yesterday. Mm-hmm. And basically was, well, how the hell does it know that it's that it's withdrawing to a Wasabi wallet, first of all? B, why does that matter? Like, and those are probably more questions that we all know, is that they're trying to collect data and they're worried, you know, they probably have to report to a chain analysis type service. But the most concerning to me was, how the hell did it know it was being withdrawn to a Wasabi wallet? And
yeah.
I read through the chain, and I think the general consensus of people, and this may be updated since, so go back and check, but the general consensus from people was this, and it was that it looks like when you join your coins, the fee for the coin join goes to a static wallet address, and I don't know why that is. And perhaps someone with a little bit more know-how could speak to this. But so basically what Binance Singapore may have been doing was, for the previous withdrawals, it was noticing that it was going to these BC1 addresses, which is the standard for Wasabi. And then all of them were sending a portion of the next transaction to the same address, which is a known coordinator for the CoinJoin. So over time, they were saying, well, he's withdrawing all of these to a Wasabi wallet and coin joining them. And then we lose, theoretically, possibly we lose track of where it's going after that. And we can't report this to the chain analysis company. I think that's what was going on. There may be some nuance that I'm missing, but basically I think they didn't know, according to what I was seeing on Twitter and what people were kind of coming to consensus on. And Udi Wertheimer was part of it, and he's relatively knowledgeable. So, you know, I think that he probably has a good idea, was that they couldn't be sure that he was withdrawing to Wasabi on that particular transaction. It's just that it was another BC1 address. So it was, that rules out a lot of wallets. And all of the previous ones had been, so they were tracking it over time.
Had been doing to the same thing. Gotcha. Yeah.
So,
So there was one step removed from something, and that would make sense because Wasabi right now is the coordinator, even though like anybody could be the coordinator. If you're paying your fees to the exact same coordinator every time, well, then all they have to do is watch for that output in the beginning of the CoinJoin transaction where you pay a fee to the known Wasabi address. And then it's like, oh, so the first transaction after leaving us was a Wasabi coin join. And then do it again. Yep. Oh, the first transaction was a Wasabi coin join. And then the third time, what do you do? What's your occupation? What's your income? What are you going to do with this money, buddy?
Which I don't understand quite. And I'm certainly not the, I mean, I have somewhat grasp of a lot of the technical stuff, but I don't know it intimately. And I don't really understand why that CoinJoin administrator would be always as the same address. Like, I don't understand why the address would be reused.
Yeah, that I don't know either. In fact, like, that seems like a oversight. If
certainly seems like it, but again,
being run.
If that was the case, but, if that was the case,
I don't really know. Yeah, I was about to say, I don't even know the specifics, so we could be totally wrong on how that even is sorted out. Yeah, what's funny is I would think that something like that would actually be a pretty easy
fix think
if that was how it worked or how they figured it out. But this is the thing that's been getting me more recently, is that I wonder if I've been wondering more and more if Lightning is going to be better as a privacy solution than a scaling one. That really, we are really Trojan horsing. If he was withdrawing over Lightning, That wouldn't have happened. They had no idea.
Yeah, you're right.
And that is just the fact that that is true right there. That if he was using Lightning, it wouldn't have been a problem. That the fact that he is using Bitcoin on chain, it is, really tells you a lot about Lightning. Yeah. That I think is being really underappreciated. Everybody's arguing about how many transactions it can do and whether or not it's going to fix Bitcoin's awful block size. It's like everybody's scaling, bitch. And it's like, yeah, well, what about privacy? Like, this is giving privacy in payments on a decentralized global network. That is alone enough reason to build this
thing out. And not only that, but when you combine the privacy capabilities of Lightning, which are have the potential to be probably better than probably almost anything on chain right now in terms of the competitors in the altcoin markets, and you combine that with the auditability of the security layer, I mean, it's really, really powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's been the big, now I have seen that there's like a reasonably big push for some sort of security or private transactions or anonymous transactions or whatever on the security layer. I've seen that as a recent big push in the Bitcoin Twitter world. But I just kind of have to wonder, it's like, is it worth screwing around with? Particularly if you would have to sacrifice auditability, which we should never sacrifice, of the 21 million cap. Yeah. And if you have these layers that allow, like, I am envisioning so many possibilities for privacy when you combine Lightning and Bitcoin that it seems like.
No, I know.
What's that?
I was just saying. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. I know, like,
there are so many privacy solutions between the two that why jerk around with the base layer, you know?
Yeah. Imagine doing an AMP to atomic swaps or an atomic swap to an AMP, like to balance five channels at once, and like going in and out, like you're connected to nothing there.
Yeah.
And there's CoinJoin into an atomic swap that amps to all of your channels. Like,
right. I mean, that's exactly it. Once you're combining both, you know, the base layer and that, it's like, how are you going to possibly, it's going to just make it so that it's no longer profitable to try to track that stuff. I think it will be so difficult. You know, and first the power users will lead the way, but then it'll be integrated as a matter of course. And once that starts to happen, it's like, oh, I mean, what are you going to do?
I don't know. It's exciting. And I think it's another one of those cases of, as the barriers get smaller and smaller, it gets more ubiquitous. Like, more and more people can use it. The tool becomes easier to use. And hopefully, fingers crossed, everybody starts using it. So, we'll see.
I think there's a possibility. I mean, just, I know we've been harping on it for the entire damn episode, but having these like Pay and Lolly and stuff like that, just to get people's feet wet in this. And then when you have, like, there are apps that integrate micropayments and stuff like that, but you've already got the Lightning stuff because it's on your phone from when you got it back, you know, from buying a Chick-fil-A sandwich. it's stuff like that that seems like so minute. But that's going to serve to onboard people, and people are going to be like, oh, well, you know, I've got these sats sitting on my phone. I might as well buy a Amazon Prime movie or something. You know, I don't know whatever it'll be. Yeah. Oh, let me just scan this QR code and boom, I got it. You know, it'll be stuff like that, I think, that'll just serve to just onboard people in mass, even if not a lot each, you know.
Get them to communicate, like to interact with it.
Yes. Yeah. And once you're interacting with it, it's like, man,
things change quick.
Yeah, exactly. So
gradually, then suddenly, all at once.
Yep. Exactly.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I think that's as good a place as any to stop.
I think so too. So I guess we'll publish this coming out on around Christmas. And hopefully we can do a little bit more of this, just gabbing like hens about whatever is going on in Bitcoin, where it's not necessarily quite as technical or the reads or anything like that. And I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll keep freshen up on this and just kind of doing the Bitcoin chat thing.
Okay. And we haven't really decided exactly how we're going to do the episodes or whatever, but just in case, I guess we'll both do plugs so we can cross pollinate. I'm Carl Campbell over at Friends Against Government podcast. Guy.
I am Guy Swan from the Crypto Economy podcast.
So go listen to each other's podcasts and
check them out.
Yep. Send
If y'all don't know Fadcast, you're missing out.
Likewise,
Car Camp It.
Yep.
Where's that from? What's Car Camp It from?
I started out as a car camping blog and then quickly just descended into madness.
Oh, that's the best ever. It's because it's about camping and cars.
Yeah.
Obviously, Car Camp It. That's
hilarious. That's that. And here we are. And so your crypto economy over at the Crypto Economy podcast, and we've done a bunch of crossover stuff before, and actually we figured out that we both started like within a week of each other up on 2 years ago, which is bizarre, but
we're like podcast fraternal twins or something.
Yeah
something dorkier than that. That's not dorky enough.
Exactly. All right. Well, everybody have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll catch you guys in 2020.
Hell yeah. Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.